Good evening and welcome to the first late debate of the season. And we are delighted to be back. I'm Katie Hannan and joining us here in Studio 10 tonight we have Neil Richmond, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Rathdown, Nasa Horrigan, Green Party TD for Dublin Central and Party Spokesperson on Finance, Public Expenditure and Health, and Alison O'Connor, columnist with the Irish Examiner. And because of our new COVID arrangements, also in the building but in other studios down the corridor, we have Pa Daly, Sinn Féin TD for Kerry, and Eoin de Barra, Infectious Diseases Consultant in Beaumont Hospital. Now, we want to hear from you, so do please get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email us on latedebate at rte.ie or tweet to at Late Debate RTE. Well, I think you'll all agree that we picked quite the day to return to the airwaves with Late Debate. Let's just first have a flavour of how the day unfolded.
I realised quickly when I knew I should that the world was made up of this brotherhood of man.
Public confidence in your ability to manage the COVID crisis has collapsed in recent months. Today you promised clarity, but instead what we have had is further confusion.
NPHET gave us advice on Dublin, and we acted on that advice. The modification relates to wet pubs and the matches, that's it.
I'm just getting a flash here now, Minister, as we speak, that the Cabinet is now to self-isolate and that the Dáil has been abandoned for a week. The Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, has been tested for COVID.
I'm afraid that's the first that I'm hearing of this. This is news to me.
I'm told that arising out of events today, the Cabinet must now self-isolate. Just on my own behalf, to clarify, lest anyone think I had a sudden rush of blood to the head earlier, we are now in a position, on request from the Taoiseach, to proceed, so we're proceeding.
What's going on, indeed? Alison O'Connor, do you know what's going on after today?
One of those days, Katie, when you're afraid to look at the notifications on your phone, and even the fact that there's still almost 2 hours left in the day, we can't rule out any further developments. Definitely one for the annals of history, and certainly not a good one for the government. And I suppose we should start by saying that it's very, very good news that Stephen Donnelly, the Minister for Health, has received a negative in his COVID test, but I guess it sounds cliche to say it, but just when you think Micheál Martin must be thinking things can't get any worse, or got up this morning thinking, you know, today will be a good day, we'll get our plan out there, and then it's basically a complete mess, I suppose, really. And yet you say that, and yet when you look at it, it's there were certain, a whole host of events that were outside of the government's control, not least the notion Stephen Donnelly did the correct thing, and the government, there was probably confusion as to, with all of us, as to what exactly they should do, what should happen with the Dáil. That was then changed, that they would come back. But I guess to a public already very sour about COVID and the restrictions and the extra restrictions today, none of that will be looked upon benignly. And watching the launch today of the plan and the different levels of that, I suppose you felt there could have been maybe a bell or a whistle. I mean, I never found myself wishing for a PowerPoint presentation before, but in the middle of it, I thought just something to lift it, some few bullet points. You know, something that kind of, when you look even now at what, for instance, I saw a little early, the Irish Times had done up this colour-coded chart saying what you can do, very kind of easily understandable, something like that, appreciating they're operating within time constraints, everybody's exhausted, I think, and it was a very hard station already, people are fed up to the back teeth. It hasn't been a great day.
Neil Richmond, with the best will in the world, like today was going to be the day that you were going to reset the dial, you're going to present this coherent plan for the next 6 to 9 months, put the last couple of months of miscommunication and poor communications behind you. It was a bit of a shambles, wasn't it?
Well, you can't control certain events. And like Alison, I'm delighted Stephen got the all clear. I hope he gets better. And I can appreciate how run down he is. Everyone's run down this time of year. Saw it earlier in the year. And equally Thomas Byrne. We need him back on his feet as quickly as possible. You can't control that. The Cairn Corla made a clear decision to suspend the Dáil. That's his power to do.
No, hang on a second. The Cairn Corla, this is again more of the confusion. The Cairn Corla said he was advised by the government to suspend the Dáil.
And to suspend it sin idea. And then once they got the all clear, we were back up. There's already been questions to the ministers for health and indeed Minister for Agriculture will be coming on his feet in about 10 minutes' time. I think the plan, which launched out, this isn't easy. Nothing about dealing with this pandemic is easy. And I appreciate everyone's sick of it. I'm sick of it. But just because you're sick of the pandemic doesn't mean the virus has gone away. Far from it. And if we look at the international comparison, we look at what countries have done it, no one has an exact model. You know, people talked about New Zealand for a while, and New Zealand started having outbreaks. People talked about Italy, Spain, France. We see rising infections. We have to maintain it, and we have to be clear. We come back to the basics in terms of limiting contact, social distancing, hand washing, mask wearing. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, but you see, we have to contain. I think people do wish you the best. I think genuinely there is a feeling out there that they want the government to get their act together on this and pull together and get, you know, get this straight. But then you see, just go back to, you say we need this to be clear. Talk about travel advice, which is a very important part of the plan and has been all the way through. Stephen Donnelly was on the news at one today, and I appreciate now, of course, we know he was feeling under the weather. But he was asked if people in Dublin can travel under the current restrictions that are now in place. Here's what he said.
OK, so at this level, should Dubliners or can Dubliners travel outside their county?
They absolutely can. And what we have, Richard, is we have a very clear level, which is level 2 for everybody.
But this is 2 and a bit, isn't it?
No, it's not.
Yeah, again, we're not sure it is 2 and a something. There's something there as well. But go back to just that very specific point of whether or not you should travel. Roll on 5 hours after this, the Taoiseach is on the 6-1 and he's asked about this again.
I'm encouraging people not to travel,
so don't
if
travel.
At all possible. We're encouraging people not, in line with the advice, because the advice is from NPHET is just that.
Okay.
And we're not varying in that advice.
Now, I don't want to nitpick, but I mean, that's pretty basic stuff. And that is two completely conflicting pieces of advice given by the Health Minister and the Taoiseach within a
couple
of hours.
There's also two different questions. Like, the government isn't in the position to tell people you cannot leave Dublin. Dublin isn't like the rest of the country. A lot of people come into Dublin from outside Dublin to work here, essential services and otherwise. This isn't when we had the national restrictions. We have very clear advice that you shouldn't travel unless you have to. I had people on today saying, look, I've booked a trip, I'm going to visit so-and-so. If you can avoid travelling, you should do so.
You absolutely can't travel outside Dublin is not our strong advice here. We're advising people to stay in Dublin.
But people, this is the thing, you absolutely can travel, but the advice is don't unless you have to.
But sure, you can have 100 people in your house because there's nothing to stop you from doing that. But the advice, what you're trying to... The
and this is actually throughout this pandemic. To be honest, Katie, when that advice has been given, people by and large have gone with the advice. We've seen people buy into it. We've had to do very little in terms of introducing really restrictive legislation works like other countries have done in terms of installing martial law in the US or trying to move between states in Australia. It's quite clear that we're in a very difficult position. Dublin is suffering much worse than the rest of the country. Dublin is the economic driver of the country. A quarter of the population live here. An awful lot of people come in here. So to move it straight up to level 3 this week would have been unwise. It's level 2 with a couple of added restrictions that most people can understand quite clearly, that I can only have, if I'm having people over to my home, it's from one other household. You know, it's less people at a match. And the wet pubs, what wet pubs in Dublin that aren't open already, because the vast, like in my constituency, only one pub is closed, all the others are serving food. It's not the same as somewhere in very rural Longford or somewhere like that, where there's only one pub in the village.
Okay. I want to bring in Owen De Barra. Owen De Barra, infectious disease as consultant with Beaumont Hospital. Owen, what do you make of this plan today and how it was presented?
I have to say I had a very busy clinical day, so I've had some time to look at it, but not a detailed look. It's great that there is something. It offers some clarity and nice to have colour coding and little steps to go through. I would say it's a very aspirational document. it doesn't set out clearly some of the implementation measures that you'd like to see, particularly in terms of how the testing would be applied and how we'd actually move, try to move ahead of this virus. I think it's quite reasonable. There's always going to be plenty of criticisms of it. And I guess looking through it, I don't think this is, you know, how you should style or design your dinner party, because you're not having to aim for six people at your dinner. But it's trying to give people some empowerment as to what we can do as a society together to try to limit the impact of this epidemic in this country. Likewise, you know, speed limits are not a goal to attain. We should try to be doing less than if we can. So I appreciate that for the authors of this, it's a very difficult thing to do. It's very difficult to be completely clear. I'm sure there's many areas of it have to be clarified, you know, 3 to 4. And this bit with Dublin is sort of 2, but with a bit extra added on. And I suspect there'll be more of that in the future. But it's welcome that we're now regionalising the approach, because this has always been very different in the regions. And we can allow certain sectors of the country to open up and get back to some sort of more normality of life, whereas people, I think, can be more informed about the local epidemiology, how the virus is behaving where they are. And hopefully then they can continue to take the actions that the vast majority of people have been to try to limit it.
And can I just ask you about what happened today in terms of when Stephen Donnelly was referred for a COVID test, which, as we say, thankfully has proven to be negative. But I think a lot of people were surprised at how the system responded to that. And you know, can you just talk me through, what were you surprised at the news that, first of all, that the Cabinet was, first of all, we were told self-isolating, they were sort of restricting their movements, and then the Dáil being adjourned and then the Dáil being recalled, that there didn't seem to be any plan in place for what would happen if a minister was tested positive for COVID?
Yeah, I think there my thoughts is that from very early on, I guess certainly the infection community have been saying to people, you need to have a plan. And that's industry and organisations need to have a plan, because if somebody critical in your organisation gets COVID, they may transmit it to others. So you need to know how your service is going to be provided and how you're going to interact with it. So the first thing everybody should be doing is trying to work out, how can I not make close contacts, those 15-minute 2 metres, or the nuanced bits of being in a room? So I don't know what way Cabinet functions in terms of their meeting rooms, but you would hope that they try to limit their interactions.
Yeah, well, I heard the Taoiseach just on prime time before we came down again saying that, you know, they do meet in this very big Cabinet room now in Dublin Castle, and that there are 2 metres.
Yeah, so the Cabinet...
Yeah,
see,
Neil.
What complicated it with Minister Donnelly is that the COVID subcommittee met yesterday. Now, that was at distance, and there was the breaks that after every, I think it's 2 hours, they have to sanitise and move around the room. But, you know, that is intense work. And that's why we had a Cabinet meeting this morning. And yes, it is in Dublin Castle, but there's always the opportunity. So I think they took a very much a safety first approach to this.
You see, I do think though, Owen, and maybe just to put this to you, and I'll bring you in then, Nessa, on this. Like, teachers are watching this today and they're thinking, well, I'm being sent into my school, and God knows how many children in that school have now been sent for COVID tests. And we do know a lot of school children around the country have had to be tested for COVID. Mm. And they're saying, well, you know, why is it okay for me to go back into that environment if the second there is a suspicion of one person in the entire government, the whole structure, possibly having it, that the whole place shuts down? So there is that sense that you know, maybe a slightly snowflakey approach to it in the Dáil compared to what they're expected to do.
Well, I think it's got to be proportionate for each organisation, and every organisation has a sort of a critical mass of staff that have to be there to make it function. And I think in the case of government, there's a very core small number of people that need to be in charge and controlling what's happening. So I think a cautious approach is reasonable. It's a challenge to work out how close contacts they would be considered. But caution in an environment where this can be spread, I think, is a very reasonable thing to apply. And the other bit I would say, that the other caution, to continue that theme, is technically the test is not detected, not negative, because we can have what are called false negatives with the test. So presumably he'd be advised in terms of, you know, his GP on the relative value of that test and what actions should follow on. But it does highlight the need for planning and preparedness for all of us about trying to limit creating contacts.
Absolutely. And we just on that point, so if you get your, what we are referring to casually as a negative COVID test, you're saying you're not actually told, you're just told they didn't detect COVID. You're not guaranteed to be negative.
Exactly.
And are there many false negatives, do we know?
It's difficult to work out in the kind of mildly symptomatic cases because we don't have a gold standard test to say, well, actually they do have it, something to mark that against. In the sort of more severe patients in hospital, we can say that somewhere between 6 and 8% of people in our first wave of the severe cases, we couldn't detect it easily from their nose or their mouth. But again, those patients were sick. So we sort of realized that they had it otherwise, or we had other ways to detect it. So it's a very difficult question to answer.
Stay with us there, Owen. Nessa, assess the day for me. Do you think this was a good day for leadership and the country in terms of how we are dealing with COVID?
Well, look, I guess the day was made up of a few different parts. This first step at setting out a 6-month plan is really, really important, and we can always do better at communicating. We should be spending the whole day outlining what those aspects are, rather than talking about whether there's confusion or not. We should be talking about what you're meant to be doing, guys. This is how to make yourself safe. And I think, for a lot of us, I can only speak kind of for my own constituents and my own family, is that we were all holding our breaths when the schools went back and waiting to see if that was successful. And it largely, given that there was some small teething problems, it largely was successful. And we did get that happening, and the schools are back. And now this is the next very, very important step towards setting out, that 6-month period, because COVID does feel relentless and it does feel like it's not going to end. And we need to give people a sense of confidence and safety, that we can live with this for an extended amount of time.
Do you think people are getting that? I'm just looking at a text message in here. Katie, Ireland is a ship without a rudder. We're sailing into chaos. COVID and Brexit and Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil can't blame each other as they're both in government. We're doomed, says Patrick in Donegal. Like, there is definitely a sense out there, like Patrick is not alone in fearing that there isn't a steady hand on the tiller here.
Well, I feel that pessimism and that kind of just total frustration, because COVID is a big, scary thing that we're all having to deal with. I have to say, in the last few days, I've been really disheartened to see a kind of a change in the tone. Like today, communicating this stuff is really difficult. And it isn't simple to organise everybody's lives into a set of public guidance. But to hear people constantly today, over and over and over again, use the phrase, "This plan is not worth the paper it's written on." Now, that's a change in tone in the discourse. And I heard many opposition TDs use that phrase. And I think that's a really serious thing to do, because that's not saying I don't like the plan.
Are you saying was Sinn Féin doing that today?
There was a number of TDs doing that today. Sinn Féin were included in it.
I'm asking Sinn Féin because I want to put that to Pa Daly.
Can I just say this one thing, is that it's fine to say that you don't think the plan is good. It's fine to think that to say that the communication isn't good. To say it's not worth the paper it's written on is basically a permission to slip to people who are already feeling worried to disregard public advice or public health advice. And I think that's a real change in tone that I'm very worried about.
Pa Daly.
Yes, Katie, thanks. I noticed from your intro there, you had the four non-blondes and their song, What's Going On. I was thinking more of a John Lennon song, Nobody Told Me That There'd Be Days Like This. And it's true what Nessa's saying in relation to a change in tone, but the government have only themselves to blame for that. At the beginning of this crisis and in the middle of it, there was daily briefings for opposition parties, and that has gone now, and they've taken a more combative role in relation to it. But I at the end of the day today, I was thinking of a fella called Paddy O'Brien, who used to be up and down Rock Street in Tralee, and he used to sell the pools. And when we were kids, he used to come around to us we'd ask him for a joke, and he'd say, "I'll tell you a joke." And we'd say, "What is it?" And he'd say, "Dáil Éireann." And that's the kind of, in the last 24 hours, you had Leo and his comments about the vaccine. You had the domestic and the non-domestic travel, which you outlined earlier on. You had the situation with Dublin and the five levels, and then the new two level. And then you had the fiasco of what happened in the... I was at the back of the chamber waiting to get in and ask questions, actually, to Minister Donnelly, and I'm glad as well that he doesn't have the virus. But the Sinn Féin team of 37 TDs, we had to find out on Twitter and from communications from RTE staff inside in Leinster House that the Dáil was going to be back at 8 o'clock. No communication through the whips, no communication through the government.
Who are you blaming for that now? Is that the Ciarán Comhairle's office?
Well, I don't know who is briefing the RT staff. That's maybe for themselves to say. But clearly, the government were briefing RT staff, and that is how we had to find out. And I agree with what Eoin de Barrow was saying, that this whole document which was produced this morning, unfortunately, it is aspirational. But we needed more than aspirations. We needed actual clarity. We needed a plan about testing and tracing. There has been one rule for some places and one rule for others. And as somebody said earlier on, I'll finish on this point. Today, there was a hint that one of the cabinet or two maybe members of the cabinet may have COVID. The whole place was shut down. 160 TDs, all the Shannon, the place has been shut down. There wasn't going to be any debate until next Tuesday. Why didn't that happen when there was an outbreak in the meat plants? Why were they allowed to keep going? So there seems to be, you know, it's embarrassing for TDs that, you know, if what you described it as snowflake, Katie, we have to shut everything down immediately, but that didn't happen. The teachers had to go in and work through it all, and the unfortunate, poorly paid workers in the meat plants had to suffer on hot bedding for another few weeks afterwards until they were tested and traced.
I take that point. We'll put that to this panel. But you said there one rule for them and another rule for the Dáil.
Yeah.
But can I put you that this is something I have to put to you, mm-hmm. that you interpreted the rules to suit yourself.
Yep.
Going back to May, at a time when we were only allowed to travel 5 kilometres, when funerals were only supposed to be for the very closest of family, you went 50k back to West Kerry to attend a funeral of a friend and a political supporter of yours.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you asked me that question, because I clarified that at the time, and I admitted that I had gone back to a funeral. Sean Martin Baucaire was my main canvasser west of Dingletown. And
I really do need to say this to you right now, because I heard so many stories of people while I was sitting in for Joe on Liveline, of mm-hmm. people who couldn't attend funerals, of the people who were family, close family, because they were from large families and they had to decide who could go. The idea that just because it is, and everyone wants to obviously show respect and be there for a friend and a friend's family at that time, mm-hmm. but it seriously undermines public health advice if somebody who is a public representative feels that they can just do it, make up the rules for themselves.
Well, obviously, I had a very difficult decision to make. I spoke to Sean Martin's family, and as the representative of the Sinn Féin Party in Kerry, I asked, what could I do for him? And I was asked one thing. One thing was to bring his coffin from the road into the graveyard outside Dingle. That was a very difficult decision for me to make, because I knew that there was a restriction in place. I made the decision that I was going to do it. It wasn't an indoor event. There was no wake involved. There was no meal afterwards. And I decided that I would take help lift the coffin from the outside, probably about 40 yards, into the graveyard in Dingle. And, you know, I have to stand over that decision. I knew what I was doing. And
did you appreciate that you were undermining public health advice in doing that so publicly?
Well, I knew that there was a rule there. I had a very difficult decision to make. And I decided that what I was going to do was was there anything I could do to pay tribute and be compassionate towards a man who I respected greatly and who had died very, very suddenly. And I had a decision to make. I felt that by going back and carrying his coffin, when you're asked, I think three times in my life I've been asked to carry someone's coffin, and I took the decision that I was going to do that.
Okay, and Nessa, you were trying to get in earlier there.
Well, I think that series of decisions outlines how difficult it is for everybody to know what the right thing to do is here, and how important it is that we listen to the public health advice and the guidance from NPHET. I'm very aware that today, with all the chaos, one of the things that happened is that opposition, a whip for the opposition, stood up in the Dáil and said that he was going to call a vote on order of business every single week until the Dáil was gone from the conference centre and into the chamber in Leinster House. Now, Like, we're all well aware that the Cian Chorla is doing their best, that they're getting advice from NPHET all the time, and they're already investigating, can they be in Leinster House and can they have the one-metre rule instead of the two-metre rule? And I think today was a really good lesson in how incredibly serious it is if we knock Cabinet out of business. And, you know, the reality is that if that somebody has a positive test and they're a teacher, everybody is isolated. If you're in a workspace in close contact with people, people do go home and are isolated. We know that it's unconstitutional for the Dáil to sit remotely. So for opposition to these people kind of playing games with this, I think it's incredibly serious, and you know, it's not something to be messed with.
Yeah, Alison.
Yeah, I mean, just listening to Pa there, and obviously a very tragic story, and as you said, one, I suppose, that was repeated all over the country during lockdown.
And just to say, we are having people get in touch saying, oh, it's one rule for them and another for us.
You know, and obviously an incredibly tough and heartbreaking decision with somebody who you were so close to. But, I mean, everybody made sacrifices. And if you're a community leader, and you make that decision, I'm afraid it does mean your moral authority then to criticise the government. And I'm very disturbed at this idea of, we'll say, Stephen Donnelly isn't feeling well today. It's a human reaction then. They've all been in the one space. What do we do? How do we handle this? We're supposed to be running the country. And yet the opposition turns to COVID shaming effectively. Because what you have to think forward is if next week another minister doesn't feel well and he or she will be sitting there thinking, I'm not going to open my mouth.
Sorry, how do you mean COVID shaming? Mm-hmm.
I mean, because I think it's COVID shaming because it's saying that effectively the decisions that were taken, what turned out to be the temporary suspension of the Dáil, or that the cabinet decided that they were going to isolate, is being criticised, made fun of in some quarters. So that, to me, there's an element of COVID shaming in that the decisions that were taken after somebody said, I don't feel well and I think I have COVID, basically, is how I would look at that.
But are we not all supposed to have it? We have a plan in here if one of our team tests positive for COVID. Presume most workplaces at this stage.
Yeah, but Katie, you're not taking, I mean, the point is you're taking it in the full glare, also a day when there is so much else going on. Mm. I think that part of the problem is that we've got to a place where we are, as we said, we are all so sour now that we have no room for, you know, any missteps or any human errors or anything like that. And I think that I can understand we'll say Sinn Féin politically, they're saying, look at this open goal, we're going for it. But the problem is, we are in a pandemic. Mm-hmm. And the more the government's moral authority is hammered, the less people will listen to them. I mean, the chances are this plan that was launched today is a good thing and will be a good thing. And that people like us who live in Dublin will be feeling really fed up because now people who live around the country and will have more regional plans will be doing better because they don't have levels as high. But that's a good thing. Everybody's more informed and in time will know what to do when they're at certain levels. So the idea of saying, as Nessa said, it's not worth the paper it's written on is actually a dangerous way to be going about your business.
To what degree are the rifts in government playing into this kind of cracked lack of cohesion that has marred the communication on this over the last number of weeks?
Yeah, it seems to be the only people who talk about rifts in government aren't in government. At the end of the day, this government is a new venture. You've two medium-sized parties and another.
Are you going to tell me now there's no rifts in government?
No, I'm saying we're less than 6 months into a new government. You have to find your way. You have to build relationships. I've never worked with Thomas Byrne before. You know, I've sat in this studio tearing lumps off him before. You have to do it, and it's adjusting. But ultimately, we are bound, and I think the entire Dáil, and we saw it in a couple of votes last week, where you see 110 or 120 TDs voting for certain measures and legislation. And I think there is a collective will in the government. We've got the budget a couple of weeks away. It's the next big challenge. We're dealing with the pandemic. We'll talk about Brexit later on. I think we're finding our way, you know. And I think, actually, to its credit, we've gone through a situation from the last 4 years. You had a government with you know, operated in minority status, couldn't get anything through. This government has passed a massive amount of legislation already, and lots of people like love to pick up on a leak from a Fianna Fáil parliamentary party meeting, or maybe myself and Nessa stared at each other funny in the chamber when, to be honest, I'm blind as a bat and I mightn't have seen Nessa. And I think we have to just dial it down. There's a little bit of, you know, I'm loath to use the term clickbait, but I was watching the press conference today and Micheál Martin hadn't even finished speaking, and there was about a dozen people, and they're not politicians, and I'm not taking a pop, but informed people, people who have influence on the public psyche, saying, clear as mud, that's a disgrace. He hadn't even finished his address. They hadn't even done the slideshow that other people criticised. And I think we do all have a responsibility regardless of what position we
have.
What
about what Alison now infamously declared on another radio, in another radio studio, I think was it last week or 2 weeks ago, that your party leader is the biggest SHIT stirrer in the government?
I think that's an unfair criticism, and Alison's sharp as a tack. She knows her way around government, but I just think I disagree with you fundamentally on that one. I'm delighted that Leo has convinced our party to go into government. He's taken on the role, first Taoiseach ever to go on and be Taoiseach. And if you look what he launched in terms of Brexit preparedness last week, in terms of all the various measures to get the economy back open, we're getting more and more people out of pandemic unemployment every week.
Would you agree with Mark McSharry that he's at times been seen to run rings around Micheál Martin?
I rarely agree with Mark McSharry's comments that come out of Fianna Fáil parliamentary party meetings. They're very colourful, and Mark's entitled them. I think I'm very glad we have Micheál, Leo and Eamon leading this government, and this government will last the full duration, and we need it to last.
Nessa, you've keen observer of all political activity. Would you say that Leo Varadkar has surprised you with some of his interventions in recent weeks?
I presume this is in reference to his comments about the vaccine.
Well, that's just the most recent. I'll get to that recent. In a moment.
It is recent. Look, I think that particular comment, I don't.
Sorry, we should tell people, because in case people didn't see the Irish Examiner this morning, there is a very interesting front page splash story where it quotes Leo Varadkar as saying that he's optimistic that Ireland can be vaccinating against COVID-19 in the new year. He said, there is a growing confidence that in the first half of the new year, we'll be in a position to vaccinate older people, those most at risk, and healthcare workers. But two senior sources at the Department of Health told the Examiner that they have no idea where he got this from. We're highly unlikely to have an approved vaccine.
You can almost see him out with the syringe, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, Katie, is that Pat?
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not really that pushed about whether there are rifts or whether there aren't. You know, certainly there seems to be some machinations going on within Fianna Fáil, but I don't see the prospect of an election coming anytime soon. So what we should do, what should we be doing, is having a proper testing and tracing system, a deal with this virus in the short term and the medium term, because we are going to be dealing with it for, you know, I would say, and I'm no health expert, but at least a year anyway, I would have thought. So let's get a plan, a proper plan in place. Let's get testing and tracing done. You know, if someone pointed out to me today, that a fellow from Ballyhaig, that if there was animals and they needed brucellosis testing or TB, that there would be 100,000 people getting, or 100,000 cattle getting tested every single day. But that's not being done. The government have had 5 months to get this up and running, a proper testing and tracing system in place. There is evidence around that, you know, some tests are coming back, you know, 5 and 6 and 7 days later. You know, let's forget about the rifts. It's only a distraction from what's going on in the country. And, like, let's get it in place. I suggest that if the government want a more cohesive approach and less bickering from the sides, they should recommence the daily briefings and not let us to be finding out from RTE correspondence as to what's even happening inside in the Dáil.
And just to go back on what you said earlier, Pat, are you saying that there is no briefings of opposition spokespeople in relation to this?
There was regular briefings on the COVID committee from the off, more or less.
And did that stop at some point?
That has stopped. Yeah.
Totally?
Yeah.
Is that the case, Neil?
Well, I think just on the daily briefings, it was the chief medical officer who said, you know, they pared it back from every day in order to allow them, the chief medical officer and the public health officials, more time to do their job.
No, but in terms of briefing,
like when there's changes coming in, obviously the relevant officials and spokespeople do get briefings, but and the COVID committee is still meeting in terms of the special select committee, as far as I'm aware. But, you know, we were in a stage when Pa was talking about where we didn't actually have a government. We had an interim government post-general election and there was negotiations. Then, of course, it was the responsibility of the government to brief every single and every group in the opposition a lot more.
It would probably be a good idea to keep
briefing
every...
No, but there's a difference because briefing, and this is something that often is brought up about why there isn't as much engagement in, say, with the Northern Irish executive. They're given a heads up, but we don't negotiate with them because, unfortunately, it has been used politically against us.
Katie, could I come back to a point that Alison made a bit earlier on about the COVID shaming?
Yes,
because I think public health messaging-wise, and it's something that's not in this document, but I think it is really important with any infectious disease, is the stigma attached with even presenting for a test or the consequences of it. And I think, you know, hats off to Stephen Donnelly for doing that, which must have been very difficult, and worry about the ramifications of that. Because for many people, the morning they wake up and they feel a bit off and they wonder, what will I do? Or there's a child in the household who's a bit unwell and what do I do? And I think we really do, as Alison said, we need to make sure that it's as easy as possible for people to get a test, and it's as easy as possible for the consequences for that to be dealt with wherever their workplace, because otherwise we really won't progress.
Yeah, it's crucial, isn't it? And also that those tests are turned around as quickly as possible, yeah. Because while they're waiting for those results, everybody in that household then is
exactly
in limbo.
And the other bit on the vaccine, I don't know if you're going to...
Yeah, what is... Oh, sorry, I just want to say, I've just got a note in here saying that Leo Varadkar, who was, of course, on primetime just before we came down, he was asked about this. He disputed that he said January. He said he meant June, not January. I think Daniel McConnell from The Examiner is disputing that. But... It was June or January. What are the prospects of a vaccine now on?
So I think that, you know, he's not wrong. I think there'll be vaccines. There's at least 137 in the vaccine development pipeline around the world. There's two licensed vaccines already, although one of them's the Russian vaccine, the other's the Chinese vaccine. So people aren't necessarily lining up. There's a few other countries have taken them up. You know, we've never managed to develop a vaccine for any infectious disease that doesn't itself develop a level of immunity. So there's lots of unprecedented, sorry for using the word, things about this. You know, the UK, Adrian Hill's group in Oxford, that there's a couple of thousand people have been vaccinated with that present. It's into phase three trials. There will be vaccines in 2021. Whether they are efficacious remains to be seen. And that's going to be a real challenge. And it may be that, you know, vaccines don't work for everybody, but they work for everybody if everybody takes them. And it may be that the vaccine only has a modest impact on severe disease or protection, but that might be enough. And this is all marginal gains. The whole thing with COVID is managing it, is trying to reduce its impact on the rest of society. And, you know, I think during 2021, there will be. Some countries already have rolled out vaccine, but it's about the efficacy. And, of course, with vaccines, safety is going to be absolutely key.
Absolutely, yeah. I want to, just before we leave the whole idea of rifts and internal dynamics, how goes the Green Party now and your position within it?
Oh, we're fantastic. Nessa. Look, we have our convention coming up online, and we're deputy leader elections. And I think we're kind of in a period now of regrouping. And, you know, look, I don't think there's any point in saying that it wasn't a difficult time, and we had some very full-on conversations, and now it's time to have kind of less full-on conversations but still talk, you know, and kind of...
When are you going to be let talk again? You don't have speaking rights right now.
End of September. End of September. I mean, look, I've work up to my eyes. I've a list of 41 things here that I have to get done tomorrow. So, like, it's not for... I have no want of work, but yeah, end of September.
Are you regarded as a bit of a dissident now within the party, do you think?
It's not really for me to answer that. I guess the party or other members of the party would have to say what their perception of me is. I'm new, relatively new to politics, and I'm trying to do it the way that makes sense to me and for the people who elected me. And that's probably the best I can do.
But are you comfortable within the party as of now, as in, because people may have thought, particularly when you voted against the second vote against the government bill, there was a sense that maybe you weren't long for the Green Party.
I don't think anyone gets into politics to be comfortable. You're constantly negotiating your position. You're constantly trying to find your way, and, you know, what is your ideology? What is your belief? Because there's constantly new things to negotiate and to deal with. So if you're asking me, am I comfortable? No. But I don't think any of us are, or should be.
Otherwise, Neil is pretty comfortable in Fine Gael, to be honest.
Oh, well, Fine Gael's different.
I said this many times. I agree with about 80% of what Fine Gael does, but I'm in a political party a long time. If you want to be an independent, go be an independent. Have all your own beliefs, but you don't get as much done as when you're in a party. I'm in politics to get things done, and I think Nessa is too.
I'd be curious to ask Nessa how she feels about the budget. And could she see? I know you don't know what's in it, but I suppose there's.
I don't know what's in it yet. That's the answer to that.
Yeah, but there is an. Continuing Katie's line of questioning, there'd be an anticipation maybe that if there were people to jump ship at budget time, that your name would be high up
on top of the list. Look, I think there's two things coming up. It's not just the budget. There's the National Economic Plan, which is a kind of a new beast and will be really important because it'll kind of set out, a kind of a longer term vision for that. And I'm obviously getting involved in the Budgetary Oversight Committee. So there's lots of things on the list. There'll be lots of challenges like that. And having not seen the budget, I can't really answer any questions, about like what I think of it, I guess.
Okay, we'll take a break there, but stay with us. 51551 is our text number.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. And just before we leave the whole issue of the five-stage plan and COVID and all of that, publicans, particularly publicans in Dublin, four times they've been brought to the well now and four times they've been had to be led away again. It's a very tough station.
It's an extremely tough station, but as I think I said earlier in the show, in my constituency, there's only one pub not open at this stage. It's different than in rural Ireland. And I think the priority is obviously keeping our schools open, keeping people in work. But the pub has a unique place in Irish society, and particularly in rural Ireland. And I think that's a fair thing. But we want to make sure we worked that those supports are there for when they can reopen, the grants they get, that they can still access the subsidies and the PUP and everything as well. And look, I have complete sympathy for the family-run pub, and many of them contact me so many times as well.
In around, if I could come in, Katie, in around the city centre, there's a lot more pubs that still remain closed. But over the last few weeks, I had been in a few pubs in Kerry. Mike DePuy, as you probably know, in the Stall yourself, and they are all the pubs that are open are running well, and I think that they are trained at this stage. And the wet pubs, I'm glad that they are opening, and in some way I would nearly prefer if the pubs in Dublin opened again under strict, very, very strict conditions. The legislation was brought in to facilitate this, quite onerous legislation, giving the guards power to go in, give the warning, etc. And, I think that if the Dublin pubs can't reopen, which they're not able to, they need, I agree with Neil, they need financial supports, they need an extension of the supports that they have been getting, because they're in a very difficult situation.
Yeah, but I suppose, I would say this to you, Nessa, as we were talking about the budget there before the break. Taxi drivers were out yesterday protesting again. They say they need financial support there, as we can imagine. Tourism decimated and the situation that they are in. They need financial, everyone needs financial support.
That's it, exactly.
When is this financial support going to dry up for everyone?
Well, the end in terms of financial support is not in sight, because I think we're very far away from that well drying up. My heart goes out to publicans, and I can tell you there's plenty on the north side that are still closed. And look, I guess the point of it is that we're trying to bring Dublin into line with the rest of the country, that we can all be in fully phase two. And I believe it is going to be looked at in early October, and hopefully we can open them then. I think that, look, after all of our arguments in the programme for government around deficits and deficit reduction and all of that's not on the horizon this year, I don't think. That, like, we need to keep people going. We need to keep them ticking along, and
support. Is it a good use of taxpayers' money to keep businesses that are ultimately never going to survive this on life support until
It's people's livelihoods, it's people's families, it's people paying their rent and their mortgage, and people, the country will open again, and we'll all go for pints again someday. And I think
no, but I'm not suggesting that the people in this situation shouldn't get help.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if the help should be directed at keeping something going, that like what are being referred to as zombie businesses that are really gone, but the, you know that they
that
haven't
is,
been,
look,
that we, hasn't been accepted. I'm saying, is there other ways we should be spending that money to help and support people in that situation?
We do know that there's a quite a large number of, you know, small to medium businesses that, you know, are leveraged already and are finding it very difficult. I'm not sure pubs are a good example of that, actually. Pubs are in a very specific situation where their business is being you know, controlled and reduced, and they can and in many cases just removed, and they can't do anything about that. There's a kind of a separate discussion around small to medium enterprise that we need to have in terms of like where is the best use of our money once we start spending it on getting the economy back.
That's a particular concern down the country with small to medium enterprises. We don't really have in Kerry many of the, you know, the foreign direct investment, particularly in Tralee. But I did meet some, you know, one publican from Jack Max was in Dublin last week with all the Kerry publicans. And, you know, he told me that there's a mortgage on the pub and there's three of them involved in, from the one family in the pub, and they all have mortgages. So, you know, they have been shut. And now I think that, you know, they'll be opening it on the 21st. But, you know, they're across the publican sector in, you know, in Kerry, which is where I'd be most familiar with them, you know, those people are suffering, and you know, I'm glad that there was supports in place for them, and I hope that that people will support them now that they're back in.
Katie, you talked about businesses being on life support, and you know,
sorry, that's probably not in the context.
No,
of
No, but I just think it's good to bring it back to the reason that all this has been done is to try to preserve life, and you know, hopefully we don't end up in that bad situation again. So it's perspective on it, I think.
Yeah, and just before we leave this, just a couple of texts. Government minister has the result the same day. My niece had to wait 3 days to receive the result of her 5-year-old daughter. I think a lot of people will have been thinking that when they heard that, but I think it's fair enough to say that if the Minister for Health is tested positive and the entire system is hanging on for that result, it's not surprising that that was turned around very fast. And then I have another one here, Katie. Like most, I am happy that Stephen Donnelly is virus not detected. However, he did go to work today, ignoring the advice from his own department, which is don't attend the office if you're not feeling well. His failure to do so led to such chaos. My workplace has a plan. How is it possible that the cabinet doesn't? Now, I think I should just say we don't know what Stephen Donnelly was feeling or wasn't feeling and at what stage of the day he became unwell. So I'll just leave that one there because I want to move on to the other big massive crisis that is looming into view on the horizon, and go back to the theme from the Four Non-Blondes. Neil Richmond, Brexit, what's going on?
It hasn't gone away, you know, Katie. Look, unfortunately, we're at a very dark point in the Brexit negotiations, probably the lowest week since I've been involved in it for over 4 years, where the British government has unfortunately taken the nuclear option to threaten to break international law and bring the situation in not just on this island but in the rights of citizens onto the negotiating table at this very late stage. Theories abound. Is it to satisfy political dissent in the backbenches of the Conservative Party weren't happy with their COVID handling, or is it somehow to try and leeway concessions on state aid, which is now a very big issue post-COVID-19? And regardless of what the matter is, it's a really dark step. And you look at the United Kingdom, if they're prepared to break international treaties when it comes to the EU, how can they turn around to China and say respect the treaties over Hong Kong?
What do you think it is, though? Because it's really difficult to read the runes here, and a lot of people have very different interpretations of what's behind this, you know, pressing of this nuclear button.
I think it's a combination of a number of things. And first and foremost, Michel Barnier is extremely good at his job. He's been our sole negotiator the UK have been through for, and it's an attempt to undermine him from the British side. We've seen this for the last 4 or 5 weeks, and it's a really sad state of affairs. But for us in Ireland and across the EU, it's to be very clear that this internal markets bill and the key aspects is a breach of international law. We won't accept it, and if the UK are going to persist on this, then there's absolutely no chance of a deal.
Well, can I come in on that, Katie? I mean,
yes,
I remember, you know, nearly 30 years ago now, I was on a ferry coming back from Belgium to Dover, and there was a group of of English football fans on it. And when they saw the White Cliffs of Dover approaching, out with the Union Jack, draped it over the side and started singing Rule Britannia. That's what Boris Johnson's at. You know, he was 3 points down in the polls when he came out with this act or this bill. Now he has up 2 points, Labour are down one, and he's a 3 point lead again. He's playing politics with it. But
look, is it pure bluff, do you think?
The withdrawal agreement must be honoured. He knows that. The Good Friday Agreement must be respected. He knows that. There will be no hardening of the border. And going back to when this initially came up and the border communities got together, they lobbied every single government and non-government TD along the border. That spread. Fairness to the government at the time, they did a decent job. But, you know, the border communities aren't going to stand for it. Nobody in this island is going to stand for it, maybe apart from the DUP. But it's not going to happen. It's bad faith. His credibility, if it hadn't been undermined completely before, that's what's going on here. In my, I think that he's already slightly pulling back on it to say that he's just ensuring that in case anything goes wrong, rather than pushing ahead with it.
That's I have to say, quite an optimistic reading of the situation. If that's all it is, just a bit of bluff to.
Well, it's more than that. Well, obviously, it's more than a bit of bluff. Mm. But politics is driving this. I believe, as soon as the news emerged, Mary Lou was on Downing Street. She wanted an urgent conversation with Boris Johnson, and he knows. I think if he wants to take on the EU, politics maybe he's thinking. Should we, the old empire, mightily go ahead and, have a hard Brexit? Maybe that's it. Maybe that's what he's playing at. But he's tough opponents, and Michel Barnier and the rest of them.
Nessa, I mean, even if that's what it is, if it's just, to boost his ratings and get the old jingoism going again and all of that, is there any way possible now at all that we can pull off a deal in the very, very short window that is now left with all sides now, eyeing each other suspiciously from the corners?
Well, I agree with Pan so far as that it is about old empire, and I have always felt that Brexit is mostly about their own domestic politics and very little about their international commitments. I'm not confident at all that there will be no hardening of the border, just because they have been so irresponsible thus far since 2016. And I am worried at the rhetoric of the last few weeks. We saw European Commission Vice President Mara Sefcovic, come out and say that this is a serious violation of international law and the withdrawal agreement. And there's lots of kind of talk around kind of the legal ramifications of that, and even the fact that that the bill was put forward at all is actually a breach, whether it got ratified or not. And I think in that scenario, in that context, where it's not just a no-deal Brexit, but an incredibly bad-tempered no-deal Brexit,
the worst
then
possible.
Really all bets are off. And I if we are dragged into a kind of a legal wrangle between, the UK and the EU over years and years, because these international kind of things always are over years and years, I really don't know how that's going to play out. And I think we should all be on incredibly high alert. And I'm very lacking in confidence that there will be a positive resolution to this in the next few months.
Alison.
Yeah, I agree, but I'm not sure I can do high alert on pandemics and Brexit. It's like just one at a time, please. I mean, it's a very... looking at it without emotion, I mean, it's a fascinating approach, isn't it, to trash your own name and reputation internationally so that it plays well at home, basically. And it has played well at home.
But doesn't it have the stamp of Dominic Cummings?
All over it, high up and low down. And you saw the reaction even when Ed Miliband, had Boris Johnson for dinner in the House of Commons yesterday. He just had no response whatsoever, which shows, I suppose, the shallowness of his understanding of where things are at or where they might be going. You almost had, that thing on Twitter where you have it's the guy guy, they use like political leaders, and you have a guy in a back room who there's a feed, you know, telling them what to say and do. The other room, exactly. It was almost as if Boris's feed wasn't working yesterday, and you know there was nobody to do. Cummings wasn't there to tell him what to do. So I mean, it is. I think it's good. You know, either way, it shows that they are continuing to play hardball. If anything, it's getting even more explosive. And for me, actually, it makes it all the more bewildering, this idea that we might have sent Simon Coveney off to Europe. You know, he's extremely good at this stuff, knows it inside out. And as we've seen in the last few days, boy, do we need him at it.
I've only a few seconds left, Neil. If you had to call it, where are we heading now? Are we heading for a no deal?
I think we're closer to a no deal now than ever before in this process, and I'm very pessimistic about it.
On that...
Send him home crying.
On that note, an appropriate end to a day today, I think. We'll leave it there. I'll just have a time for a couple of headlines from The Examiner. Donnelly drama adds to day of shambles. Confusion surrounds COVID travel restrictions is a second story there. And that's all we have time for. Tonight's programme was produced by Caroline Dalton. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon. Dave Gibson was on sound. I want to thank all my guests for joining us this evening, and go over now to Colin Murray on Late Date.